You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, February 16th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, David Dayen. On the quiet assault on Obamacare, the death of the PUSDR nomination, the Republican attack on pensions and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And maybe we'll even throw in this intelligence review by a Wall Street hedge fund guy. Of course. Also on the program today, deadly bombings in Baghdad. At least 48 people killed. ISIL claiming responsibility. Meanwhile, in Pakistan, up to 65 people killed in the town of Sawan. Unclear at this point who has taken credit for that bombing. Also, today, a day without immigrants across the country. There's going to be another one, I think, maybe in May. Tomorrow, we'll see. General strike has been called. Meanwhile, News Corp may have some SEC troubles over their attempted hiding of Roger Ailes' sexual harassment payments. Congress talking about having hearings about Flynn and about leaks. Intel leaks now. Ginny Thomas, wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, giving him another opportunity to choose not to have ethics and recuse himself. Susan Collins, a no on Scott Pruitt. McCain, a no on Mick Mulvaney, which means that both of them have enough Republican votes to pass. And net neutrality under assault by paid-off civil rights groups. Ah, yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the revolution. All this and more on today's program. I know Michael covered this at one point later in the program, but I happened to see this, and I thought this was so fascinating. Donald Trump's response. Now, of course, yesterday he had a joint press conference with Bibi Netanyahu, and I guess American policy now has changed fairly dramatically in terms of what we want as an outcome, but it's, you know, whatever works. And fear not, folks. Donald Trump has put Jared Kushner, the 30-something-odd son of a millionaire or billionaire? Billion? I don't know. Now he's in prison, though, because he tried to set up his, Jared Kushner's dad tried to set, I didn't know the details on this, but he tried to set up his brother-in-law with a prostitute and videotape it to undercut his testimony or to blackmail him from testifying against him in some other case.
How many times are you going to complain about me setting your brother, his husband up with a hooker at Seder's? I'm tired of it. It was business, and I'm sorry, not sorry. I went to jail anyway, so it didn't work well for me. Stop complaining. Pass the brisket.
I don't wonder how that, like, actually went down. Like, you just, like, sent the prostitute to, like, bump into him on the street. Like, oh, hey, how are you? Oh, it's one of those, like, trading places situations.
How's it going? Oi, I got bumped into. Oh, all right,
but nevertheless,
hooker.
Jared Kushner, of course, who better to than a guy whose family has supported the building of settlements just as, like, a fan? Who better to put in charge of trying to broker Middle East peace? Unless, I guess, you're Steve Bannon and you want to get the guy out of the White House. Right? Like, this is the special assignment we got for you. It's going to involve a lot of travel. You're going to be away. But all right. But that's a separate talk. So an Israeli reporter asked, do we have the question? Asked Donald Trump about anti-Semitism. And this was the first time it occurred to me that Donald Trump actually was sat down during the course of the campaign and specifically told by someone, look, there's X amount of votes out there for you and support if you specifically open the door to anti-Semitism. I mean, because it's so ham-fisted. And it's just, look, Donald Trump, he's like a child with, I guess, with emotional and mental issues. And he's like a very effed up child. But for him to respond this way, just the association, it's fascinating. Listen to this.
Since your election campaign and even after your victory, we've seen a sharp rise in anti-Semitic incident across the United States. And I wonder, what do you say to those among the Jewish community in the States and in Israel and maybe around the world who believe and feel that your administration is playing with xenophobia and maybe racist tones? And Mr. Prime Minister, do you agree to what the President just said about the need for Israel to restrain and to stop settlement activity in the West Bank? And a quick follow-up on my friend's questions. Simple question. Do you back off from your vision to the end of the conflict of two-state solution as you lay out in Bar-Ilan speech, or you still support it? Thanks.
Well, I just want to say that we are, you know, very honored.
Pause
by
it. Now, I just want to say that we are very honored by, where's this going to go? What is the first thing that comes into his head when he's got to address the charge of anti-Semitism? Well, we're very honored to have Bibi Netanyahu here, and, we celebrate Jews. Or, I mean, who knows what platitude it could possibly be? Let's go.
Well, I just want to say that we are, you know, very honored by the victory that we had, 306 Electoral College votes. We were not supposed to crack 220. You know that, right? There was no way to 221, but then they said there's no way to 270. And there's tremendous enthusiasm out there. I will say that we are going to have peace in this country. We are going to stop crime in this country. We are going to do everything within our power to stop long simmering racism and every other thing that's going on, because a lot of bad things have been taking place over a long period of time.
Pause it.
I think one of the reasons...
He will not say the words anti-Semitism. He will not say the word Jewish. Continue. This is just bizarre.
...taking place over a long period of time. I think one of the reasons I won the election is we have a very, very divided nation. Very divided. And hopefully I'll be able to do something about that. And I, you know, it was something that was very important to me. As far as people, Jewish people, so many friends.
You said Jewish people.
A daughter who happens to be here right now, a son-in-law, and three beautiful grandchildren. I think that you're going to see a lot different United States of America over the next 3, 4, or 8 years. I think a lot of good things are
happening. A totally white one.
And you're going to see a lot of love. You're going to see a lot of love. Okay? Thank you.
I wonder if Jared Kushner just sits there and says, like, wow, this is weird. Dad won't say anything about
wait a second, what?
Anti-Semitism. Dad.
Anti-Semitism.
Jared
Dad.
Kushner had the biggest grin on his face ever. It's like he's some sort of weird robot.
There is something just really, really odd about it. Look, I mean,
you don't say.
Well, it's just it's really odd. It's almost, I mean, it's like literally, it's like this type of thing, like, we've got your entire family in the back room. If you say the words anti-Semitism, or if you say that any of your family are Jewish, if you combine those two things, we're going to shoot all of them. Good luck answering that question.
Yeah,
I mean,
there was
like a palpable panic about trying to answer that question. It was really strange, I thought. I mean, really strange.
Yeah, well, I wonder where he would have gotten coaching in that direction. It's like, is there really anybody on his team that might have overtly anti-Semitic tendencies?
But, I mean, it's not just that there are, I mean, he still seems to feel like, I cannot afford to have a quote, a poll quote. I found the whole thing just fascinating. Like, he doesn't say, like, that's ridiculous.
Even Bibi.
There's no anti-Semitism in my administration. My daughter is Jewish. My granddaughter is Jewish. I mean, this is a...
Even Bibi.
This should be a...
Kind of a...
No, but he's, that's but he, not
even
he
Bibi's there,
say,
like...
No,
even I Bibi's there,
that's not
like...
what they want to say, because like, no. They want to send schmuck. The other message, and that's not the plan. The plan is to keep the anti-Semitism going without saying it.
Yeah, really impressive. Wait... I mean, really impressive.
Frankly, as long as you let us kill Palestinian, build settlement, you can play whatever game you want. Who is this Stephen Miller? He looked like a genetic accident.
Oh, we'll have more on Miller in a bit. But, you know, folks, podcasts aren't the only thing you can get on demand. What? Is that right, Sam? Well, I mean, yes, you can order in food and you can, I guess you can get television programs on demand. But if you're a small business owner in particular, like myself, and you are a little bit on the more on the ball and you can actually ship the merchandise that you have out of your offices, maybe like you, you can now get postage on demand with stamps.com. Anything you can do at the post office, except for go out, get rained on, get snowed on, have it be cold. I guess if you live somewhere else, maybe get sunburned. God, I would love to get sunburned walking out of the house right now. You can do right now from your own desk with stamps.com. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your own computer and printer. And unlike the post office, stamps.com never closes. So if you're like me and you've gone through, you know, you've cycled through Twitter for the 15th time, at 3 in the morning, you decide maybe I should do something productive. You can print out postage. You can put it on your packages that you get to send out. 24/7. I mean, I'm sure this is probably what goes on at Film Guy Matthew's house.
No, I don't disagree with Jeremy Scahill. Let me do this for another 30 minutes.
As I
okay.
type on Twitter. Well, I was saying Film Guy Matthew probably...
definitely.
His girlfriend, Mary, probably has to hear the printer going on all night as he's, like, shipping stuff out. Right now, use the name of this program, Majority Report, for a special offer. A 4-week trial that includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Majority Report. That's stamps.com. Enter the code Majority Report. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Never leave your house or your office again. Think about it. Stamps.com. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the great David Dayan. We'll be right back. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. That was Stiff Little Fingers, folks. We had a big to-do the other day about punk. Apparently, that's punk. When I used to listen to that, it was just rock. But now everybody says that was punk. On the phone, the great David Dayan, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, David.
You're not punk.
No, I'm not punk. A little more
rock. You
don't
know anything about punk, man.
I don't know anything about punk. I mean, I used to listen to lots of Stiff Little Fingers, but now I'm told that's punk. I always perceive punk as a little more thrashy than that, but you of course are punk, David Dayan.
I am the punk rock of obscure Health and Human Services regulations.
Well, let's talk about that because we've got sort of two different dynamics that are going on right now. One is, of course, an administration that is embroiled in a what could be a far ranging scandal. They're also shockingly incompetent and inept, but they don't have to be terribly competent to wreak havoc across our government because they have a Republican Congress and obviously a Supreme Court too. But let's start with Obamacare, because I've been saying for months that they're ultimately going to have to create a narrative that Obamacare is falling apart. So anything they do is not an option. It is something to save this thing, this edifice, which is falling apart. And they're doing a lot of quiet things to help that happen.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think too many liberals, progressives are focused on the machinations in Congress. You know, Congress is sort of at each other's throats about Obamacare, what to do, whether to repeal, whether to replace, and all of these kinds of things. Behind the scenes, this really ramped up when Tom Price got formally placed as Health and Human Services Secretary. And just yesterday, HHS issued these proposed rules, and they're proposed, they're not final yet, but it's likely that they'll be finalized. Essentially all they do is make Obamacare, the exchanges, harder to access and make the coverage worse. I mean, the idea here is what they call market stabilization. And insurance companies have complained that it's essentially too easy to get Obamacare. You can sign up in the middle of outside the enrollment period if you have a significant life event change, like a marriage or a loss of employment. They talk about gaming the system where people don't pay their premiums, and then the next year when they need coverage, they sign up again. So all of the things that were done in this proposed regulation, are done for the benefit of insurers. So they cut in half the time period, the open enrollment period, for the exchanges. So normally it would go from November 1st to the middle of January. Now it's going to go just to the end of December. So it's just less time to get your coverage. Number two, if you want to get coverage outside that enrollment period, you now have to fill out a bunch of forms. You have to pre-verify that you, in fact, are in this significant life event that you said you were. It's just an extra hurdle. Before, they would sort of assume you were on the up and up, and then they would verify it after the fact. Now you have to verify it before the fact. And obviously that time period of the verification process is time when you're not covered. And then the third thing is that insurance companies can use a premium that you to pay off a prior debt from an individual before they weren't actually allowed to do that.
So wait, when you say that, so in other words, like, okay, I owe Blue Cross Blue Shield $2,000.
Right.
And if I go to pay, but I've signed up again for a different proposal with Blue Cross Blue Shield, I can pay my, I send in what I think is my premium for my new health insurance coverage.
And now they can take it to pay off a prior debt. That's correct. I mean, in the past, they could still try to go after you for the debt, but they would have to sort of segregate the money and say that, okay, if you're paying for coverage, we're going to give you the coverage. But now they can take that money and move it to this other area. So all of these things I said, as I said in my piece at The Nation, are sort of the equivalent of placing an insurance office on the eighth floor of a building with no elevator. It's just making it harder to get insurance. The other side of this is that there's something called an actuarial value. Which one thing that Obamacare did is it put in standards so that when you get insurance coverage, it actually covers something. And in order to do this, they came up with this idea of an actuarial value, that the coverage itself has a worth based on what it would cover if you ever had to use the coverage. And it put in the law, there are hard numbers that says this has to have a 70% actuarial value or 60% actuarial value. There's an exception, what they call the de minimis exception, which, there are minor
variations. Let's stop for a moment on this actuarial value. So in other words, if I'm a man in my 50s and I get health insurance and I don't smoke, but I happen to, I engage in, certain physical, I play rugby, let's say. There is a number that the insurance companies have where they anticipate how much I will take out of the system over the next 10 years. Let's say.
And it's based on the coverage that they give you because, how much you would take out of the system or how much you would take out of the insurance system is based on what they offer. So they say,
so if it's dental,
we cover this knee injury to this percentage, and we cover this heart disease to this percentage. It you're talking about what the coverage is, what it actually pays for. And that has to have a certain value attached to it. And what this regulation does is it lowers that value. It says you can come in a little bit lower than this number that Congress set out, and it'll be okay. So it's a subtle but legitimate degrading of the coverage of Obamacare. So not only is it harder to get, it's not as good.
And the problem with that is, even if it makes the coverage a little bit cheaper, it's not as good, but it lowers the subsidies for people in the private exchanges. And so if you want the same level of care, of quality, of your health insurance now, the subsidies available for that are less.
Right. And you would pay more if you wanted that better coverage. It would be another level up. There's these metal levels like gold, bronze, and silver. It would be a level up to get the same equivalent coverage it's not necessarily that drastic. It's a small exception, it's like 2%, but it's a subtle weakening of the coverage. And that's really where they want to go. They want to make it so that the essential benefits are lower and that have a lower threshold and that the insurers don't have to, offer as much with this coverage. And they're sort of doing it through the administrative arena to the level that they can. Obviously, to really attack this, they would have to do it through Congress.
And they've also, my understanding is, there is the IRS has been instructed not essentially to pursue people in terms of the individual mandate.
Yes, and this is, you have to sort of read through this because essentially nothing is changing. Right now, you don't have to necessarily. There's a line on your IRS form that you turn in that asks, you know, did you maintain insurance coverage for the entire year? This is for the individual mandate, because if you didn't maintain that coverage, you can get dinged with a fine that is collected by the IRS. And in previous years, if you didn't write anything on that, they would still take your tax return, and they would still process it. They might audit you because of that lack of mentioning, you know, whether or not you got coverage, but they wouldn't ding it. The plan was that starting this year, if you didn't fill out that line describing whether or not you maintained coverage, they would not accept your return. They would return your return to you, in fact. The Trump administration changed that. And the IRS said specifically this is because of Trump's executive order that ordered all agencies to relieve any burdens from the Affordable Care Act. And the IRS interpreted that to mean that this would be a burden if we're returning all these tax forms to people who don't fill out that line. But what it really is saying is that we're not going to enforce this very hard, because that would have really tightened up enforcement, obviously, if you force people to say whether or not they got coverage. That would tighten up the enforcement of the individual mandate. The clear expression here is that they're not going to tighten up enforcement of that mandate. And if people get the message on that, it's simple to just leave that out and take your chances that you won't be audited, and then less people will have to pay that mandate.
All right. And so and then the other thing to add is Humana just announced it's going to pull out of the individual market exchanges in 2018.
Yes.
So here's the question. I mean, and maybe this is just, you know, sort of beyond our, you know, beyond anybody's ability to predict. But are all these things going to degrade Obamacare enough that there's going to be this narrative that it's falling apart? I mean, because it seems to me, you know, I think at least within the past 6 to 8 months, there's been a general sense of like, well, Obamacare is more or less stabilized. There's flaws in it, but it's broadly speaking, you know, maybe just 50-50 in the country in terms of what people's perspective is. And certainly the media, I think, narrative is that it's been, you know, a shining success, but it's been maybe not as ambitious as it should have been, but okay. Does that narrative change?
I think that the cumulative effect of all of these things that we've talked about is that less people will have coverage in the individual market, which is, you know, where the greatest amount, you know, about half of the coverage expansion in Obamacare is in the individual market. And it's the most disruptive part of the system with respect to the Affordable Care Act. So less people will have coverage. That means less stakeholders who are going to worry about this going away, right? And the coverage will be slightly worse. And so you can see a narrative built, absolutely, that look at the numbers from 2016 to 2017 to 2018, and you'll see this shifting down.
Right.
Both because it won't be promoted as heavily. I mean, we saw that at the end of the enrollment period this year, that the ads were taken out, and you know, the Trump administration was certainly not pushing this to the level the Obama administration did, and you did see a significant dip in coverage in enrollment in the last week of the period. So you're just going to see more and more of that, I think, and that's going to be available for Republicans to say, look, this market is blowing up. And then, you know, the Humana thing, Humana only had coverage offered in 11 states. The biggest problem is going to be Tennessee, where in some areas of Tennessee, Humana was the only provider of insurance. So now those specific counties in Tennessee, there is actually going to be no provider unless somebody steps up in 2018. if that continues to happen, if you have, you know, Aetna and Cigna and Anthem, if you have these other insurance companies drop out, then you do have a real problem. And of course, one of the reasons that these insurers are considering dropping out is because of the uncertainty, because they don't know if these exchanges are going to exist, or whether Congress is going to pull the plug on them, or whether all of the rules behind them are going to change. So the very uncertainty of what's going to happen with Obamacare is creating the death spiral in some ways.
And they're somewhat reluctant to get into that business anyways, because that's a business where they actually have to use their own money as opposed to just...
They have other business lines.
Right.
I mean, insurance companies can you know, just stick with large employers and work with them. And
all they're doing in that instance...
relatively ineffective.
Right. And all they're doing in that instance is they're just basically the servicers. They don't have their own money on the line like they do in the individual markets.
Right. They're passing through the large employers' premiums and passing through the costs from the providers. So sure, certainly.
And then the real issue is going to be things like the more broadly, I guess, enjoyed things like pre-existing coverage, things like 26-year-olds,
right,
things like rescission and whatnot. But again, these are right, all elements that if the Democrats and those people who want to fight the destruction of this, I mean, you're going to have governors who are going to be upset about the Medicaid thing. There's another plan floating around out there. We don't need to talk about that now, about how they're going to deal with that. But,
oh, I think that's fascinating. We should talk about that for a minute.
Okay,
The Medicaid thing is like becoming the major trip up here for Republicans, to the extent that they're actually thinking about expanding funding for Medicaid in the 19 states that didn't take the expansion. Because otherwise, those states, which are all Republican states for the most part, would be shortchanged if they change the Medicaid program, because the baseline would be completely different for those states relative to the ones that took the expansion. So if they change Medicaid and turn it into what is known as a block grant program, where everyone gets a set amount of dollars, those Republican states would get less dollars. So Republicans are actually talking about expanding Medicaid so that they can get around to coming up with some parity for everybody.
The hilarious thing about that is to look at some of these quotes from these Republicans saying, like, well, it would be unfair to penalize those states that chose to essentially penalize their own citizens by not offering them health insurance, by not giving them this money now, because... The dirty little secret about this Medicaid block grant thing is that it doesn't have to go to Medicaid. They have all sorts of different ways of funneling that money out to other programs that they're dealing with, essentially.
Right.
I just find that hilarious, where John Cornyn is saying, like, well, states that chose not to expand based on conservative principles in opposition to the takeover of healthcare should not be punished.
In other words, we should lavish bigger government on them as a reward for the small government principles
it's unbelievable. Do you think they're going to get away with that, at least in terms of, like, the Freedom Caucus?
I think that's a huge slugfest, because there are, you know, members of the Freedom Caucus, for example, who don't want to expand government at all and don't want the Medicaid expansion. They want it essentially to take it away from those other 31 states that did expand. You know, so the question is, do you plus up the 19 or do you plus down the 31? And, of course, those 31 states that expanded Medicaid, there are significant numbers of Republican senators that represent those states, like West Virginia and Ohio. I think there are 20 senators. And there's no way they're going to agree to cut the funding dramatically for their states. So that is this is one of the major stumbling blocks now to getting any kind of change in the healthcare system through a Republican Congress. It's fascinating.
Do you have a sense of what the Democratic strategy is here? I mean, my inclination would be like, okay, if they're stuck, we've got to ratchet up the tension on this. But I don't get the sense that they do that.
I think Democrats need to pay more attention to this administrative stuff. It's harder to fight, obviously, but there's no question that there is a concerted strategy from the Health and Human Services Department, from the Trump administration, to degrade Obamacare, both by limiting the people who can access the system and by degrading the coverage and the level of coverage and the quality of coverage. So that's the fight, I think, in the near term, that is being sort of left aside in the laughing and pointing over the struggles that Republicans are having
in
Congress.
And basically the goal in that fight is just to make sure that the narrative is they're attacking it now, as opposed to this thing's just getting decrepit. I mean, this is...
That's correct, because that's ultimately going to be the terrain that this is fought on. It's a blame pointing game, and it's a finger pointing game in some respects. But who's responsible?
Right.
All
right. Let's talk about the other. I mean, this pension thing is, it's just unbelievable. Like it's so naked. Explain to people about the pension program that's in California. I think Illinois has it or has been talking about adopting it.
Yeah, there are eight states in all.
Okay, all right, tell us what this program is.
Yeah, so the core problem is that many, many people, I think over half of all Americans, don't have access to a retirement plan at work. So if you're working in a company, in an office job, often you will get a 401k option where you can place a certain percentage of your salary with an employer match potentially into a plan that you can invest in the stock market, and that money builds over time. Well, if you're working at Target or you're working at a retail job maybe, most likely you don't have that opportunity, and we're becoming a service sector economy, and so all these people don't have the chance to save for retirement. We know that there's a crisis there, right? Because we know that the average amount of savings that people have for retirement is shockingly low. So states, because the federal government has done nothing on this, essentially, states have decided to step in. They'll say, okay, we're going to create a plan that allows anyone, no matter where they work, to save. It would be, you will have a certain amount of your payroll deducted. It will be placed in an individual account, like an individual retirement account. It will be managed by a state board. They will put it in safe securities. It will be portable, so you can go from job to job. You'll still have this account. And it'll have all of the features of a retirement account, and it'll give you access to it. And it'll be opt-out, so that automatically you are enrolled in it, but you can change it if you have, you know, the need for more money up front. You can opt out of the system. You can lower the percentage of your payroll that you put into the system.
And again, we should remind people that 401ks have proven to be one of the world's worst experiment in terms of saving, right? I mean, like, they're
just... Well, this is certainly true, but on the hierarchy, you'd have pensions, defined benefit pensions.
Right.
Then you'd have 401ks and defined contribution plans. And then you'd have nothing, right? like, nothing is the worst option because you end up not saving at all.
Right.
And having no money. So this comes somewhere in the middle where at least you would have access to a savings plan that would be safe, portable, universal, auto-enrolled, and you can do it.
It's like a public option. It's a public option, essentially.
Kind of a public option.
And we should also mention that it's the management fees, and this is really, this is the golden chalice. The management fees of this are extraordinarily low relative to, I think, your sort of more private plans.
And the portability is actually the golden chalice, because normally if you change jobs and you have a 401k, you got to roll that over into an IRA. And usually you're working with some investment advisor to figure out how to roll that thing over into a personal account. And that's where the money-making opportunity really exists. Because then you get sold on how to roll this over. Well, you should put that in an annuity, or you should put that into this target fund, which has a large fee attached to it, or something like that. It's that changeover that really can be an opportunity for robbery here. So the one issue with these state plans, and by the way, the state's not on the hook for anything. They're just managing this plan with the low administrative fee. There's no threat that the state would go bankrupt with regards to this. It's an individual retirement account.
Right.
The one thing is that we have a law called ERISA, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974, and it preempts state laws on all these employee benefit plans. And even though this is a state-run plan and the employer has sort of nothing to do with it except that it deducts from the payroll as a service to facilitate the plan, it might be considered an ERISA plan, and at which the whole thing falls apart and gets subject to lawsuits. So the Obama administration last year put together a new rule that says if states want to do these kinds of savings plans, we're not going to stand in the way. We're going to clarify that these plans would be exempt from this federal preemption, and we're not going to get in the way.
And we should note here, too, that dynamic of allowing the states to experiment is always what we hear from conservatives, right?
That's correct.
The best model for federal government. Give the states the opportunity.
Laboratories of democracy
exactly.
can experiment. They can go ahead and do these things, and the federal government is not going to intervene in that glorious process. Well, Republicans want to intervene in that process because that regulation from the Department of Labor didn't get done until August of last year, it qualifies for being overturned under this thing called the Congressional Review Act.
Yep.
And I don't know if you've talked about that.
We talked about it, I think, in June of last year, when we were like, all the big stuff is being done before June of 2016, because in the very unlikely, can't possibly happen event that the Republicans win the presidency, they could overturn this.
So anything passed after June of last year is eligible for these resolutions of disapproval. And the important thing is that there's no filibuster available in the Senate for these things. So it just takes a majority vote in both houses of Congress, signed by the president. And the rule is not only rescinded, but could never be brought up again without Congress's consent. So it really just completely...
It's like a weird double jeopardy type of thing or something.
Yeah, it like buries the ability to make these changes unless Congress affirmatively says, yes, you're allowed to. So three of these have already passed both houses of Congress. Eight others have been passed by the House and are awaiting action in the Senate. And one of them is this ERISA rule. So... the House passed that yesterday, in fact, and if it passes, it would expose all of these state-run retirement plans to preemption, to lawsuits. It would really create so much uncertainty that these plans could not be done.
And who stands to benefit from this? I mean, why would they do this, David? I can't possibly imagine. Why in the world would the Republicans?
Right.
The swamp has been drained.
Stop a states' rights initiative. Well, it happens to be the investment advisory industry, which is very much against this idea of having competition for their services from a state-run plan. And so it's the investment and insurance industries that are against this, and Republicans are doing their bidding.
I mean, it's really that naked. And we should say now, too, once you also cut off that new fiduciary responsibility rule. I mean, this is just going to be
You look at those two in concert with one another, right? And on the one hand, all of a sudden, investment advisors don't have to act in the best interest of their clients, and we're going to take away the competition from state and municipal plans at the same time. So now, it's open season on retail investors.
All right, look, we're not going to have time to talk about the assault on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Today. I mean, I have a feeling this is going to go on for a couple days. But just briefly, Puzder, the bottom line with the Puzder, the CEO of Carl's Jr.'s, is that here's a guy who he's sort of the Scott Pruitt to EPA in some ways, right? Like he's been his experience with the Department of Labor was a function of being fined and on the wrong end of the Department of Labor, and he was put in charge of it. But ultimately, he was sunk why by the Republicans? Because we should remind people, if the Republicans don't want somebody sunk, they're not sunk.
Right. I mean, that's clearly the case, because it's the environment in the Senate now is you only need 50 votes. So Betsy DeVos can get through even with full opposition from Democrats because not enough Republicans turned on her nomination. So really the only way that someone like an Andy Puzder, which sounds like a name bullies give someone, like, hey, Puzder.
Right.
But anyway, the only way he could get stopped is if there was, Republican resistance. And two things sort of came together for that. Number one was this pre-existing issue of Puzder not having enough fealty to the anti-immigrant right. I mean, the first thing I saw about this guy was an article in Breitbart by Julia Hahn, who now works in the White House under Bannon, just attacking Puzder for his pro-immigration views. Now, Puzder isn't... Yeah, I mean, he's just sort of your basic exploitative businessman who wants to use cheap labor, and that used to be a big part of the Republican coalition. But now you're not allowed to do that because it might help brown people in some way. So he has, been written out of the coalition, and it did come out today, in fact, that Bannon and Stephen Miller had it in for this guy, that he didn't have any real institutional support in the White House, and that became a problem when this other thing came out about domestic abuse and the tape from the Oprah Winfrey Show of his ex-wife years after the marriage dissolved, speaking in disguise about her situation with domestic abuse and Puzder vowing revenge on her if she ever spoke out. Because that was bad enough in and of itself, but because Puzder didn't have any friends in the base and in the upper echelons of the White House because of his immigration stances, that was enough to take him out, whereas it might not have been if he was lined up with the base on that particular.
Of course. I mean, he would be like, the fifth guy in the administration to have had a record of beating his wife. Right?
I mean,
let's be honest, folks. Like, that's not a disqualifier. The president himself is in. There's depositions out there about how he beat one of his wives. I mean, So it just so happens, though, that he was wrong on immigration. So he's gone. So what have you heard any names that are out there? I mean, from my perspective,
the president actually announced it probably as we were on the phone here.
Oh, geez.
It's a guy named Alexander Acosta. He's going to be the nominee. He worked in the National Labor Relations Board under Bush. And that maybe is all I need to say.
Right.
He was also a U.S. attorney from Florida, has had a couple other jobs in government.
So this is, in some respects, the worst case scenario.
And he's Hispanic, so you know that fills that box.
Well, and this is one of the worst case scenarios because he's a guy who's going to know what to do. Right?
Exactly. He's going to be a well-informed deviant in the system rather than just a random deviant in the system who doesn't know how to get anything done.
Right. I mean, the best thing that you could say about Betsy DeVos or a Dr. Ben Carson is that at least you've got like 6 months before they even figure out how to turn on their computer at work. And then they'll start to wreak havoc on everything. But this guy's going to start the ground running with rolling back all sorts of National Labor Relations Board stuff, and
yeah.
I mean they're going to the assault is just going to be amazing.
The good news is that it's going to take longer for him to just get into office.
Right.
You know? I mean the dragging out of the Puzzler fight has meant that there is no leadership atop the Labor Department that there would be if he was in. So, you know, the longer that takes, the better it is, you know, for safeguarding some of the rules and regulations that they oversee.
And the funny thing is, it seemed like Puzzler was going to get out weeks ago, but they kept him in so that they can maintain this image of, it seems to me, of an administration that is making a great transition. And then they lost their national security advisor.
Well, really kind of the hidden driver of this whole thing was DeVos, because the Senate committee that oversaw the DeVos nomination let her go without finishing her financial disclosure forms and everything. So they let the hearing happen first. And that caused this huge outcry from Senate Democrats. And, of course, the hearing went really badly. So Lamar Alexander, the chair of that committee, the HELP committee, the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, said, well, we're not going to do that with Puzzler. He's going to have to fill out his forms. And that's why there were four delays in Puzzler's nomination hearing, because he couldn't get the forms done, and all that time allowed all of this opposition research to come out on Puzzler, including the Oprah thing, which really sunk him. So DeVos was kind of a hidden driver in this whole thing.
Because the Oprah thing just gave people an excuse, essentially.
It was essentially that you know, something is going to come up on all these guys because they essentially weren't vetted
right
prior to being nominated. And when something comes up, either you have institutional support or you don't. And the problem for Puzzler is he didn't.
Right, okay.
And so it's really the interplay between the Oprah thing and the longstanding lack of support because of the immigration issue.
David Dayen, thank you so much for catching us up on this sort of less sexy, but in many respects, far more important in terms of the lives of Americans. And now back to our regularly scheduled programming of the implosion of these lunatics at the White House. Unbelievable.
Thank you.
David, let me ask you one quick last question.
Okay.
What should be? Is there anything that we talked about today, or that we didn't talk about today, that you have your eye on that you think is going to be really important in that same fashion?
Okay, so the tax reform debate is really, really interesting It's kind of one of the major issues, and it's a fight between very large corporate interests right now, because there's this whole thing called the border adjustment tax. And the border adjustment tax, it's a little complicated to get into, but suffice to say that retailers hate it.
Right.
And that includes the Koch brothers, actually. They're very much against it. And yet Republicans are pushing it. And there are other facets of corporate America that like it. And so that fight between retail / Koch brothers and the rest of the business coalition is going to be a massive thing that people need to keep an eye on. And then the other thing are just not just the retirement issue, but all of these Congressional Review Act regulations. Between now and May, Republicans are going to try to get as many of those done as possible. And every time the Senate resists by, you know, lengthening a nomination or just gumming up the works in some form or fashion,
it makes it harder for one of these to pass.
It makes it harder because there's a 60-day deadline. So they only have until the end of May, really, to get these done. 60 legislative days. That's why it's till the end of May. So the resistance isn't just a symbolic sort of show of support or virtue signaling with the base. In the Senate, it has a real impact. You can save these regulations by forcing Mitch McConnell to choose what he wants to do, rather than having carte blanche to do it all.
Fantastic. Really interesting. Thank you, David Dayan. Really appreciate it, buddy.
All right. Thanks a lot.
That's a very important dynamic that to be aware of, that literally preventing Mitch McConnell from getting out of his car and getting into the Senate office building, if you, or any other way, obviously, that the works are gummed up and choose into these legislative days, there is a clock ticking. And that's and he's talking specifically about that Congressional Review Act. They only have 60 days, legislative days, from which to review those executive orders, or we should say executive agency rules from June of 2016 to the end of the term. So, and then, you know, you start to see Donald Trump is at a pace that is so far behind everywhere else, every prior president in terms of appointing people to the executive branch. So this is good. There's real value in this. All right, we're going to take a break, folks, and head into the fun half. Just a little bit of house cleaning here at the moment. Housekeeping? House cleaning? Cleaning and keeping. Next week, we will be taking some time off. We will have all new shows for you next week. Interviews. Interesting stuff. It's going to be great. You're going to love it. I promise you. Fantastic.
More and more people are noticing.
More and more people are noticing. More and more people. And it's great. It's terrific. It's the best.
But not only is it great, I would say it's also tremendous.
There's going to be so much noticing, you're going to get sick of noticing.
You might not want to be noticed anymore.
Every day you're going to have one?
We're going to have new shows every day. And I think we're also going to do a Two Dope Boys, but that'll be new to most a lot of these people. It will be a new one?
It'll be new for even Dope Boys listeners.
That is tremendous.
Synchronized.
Oh, if I
what
have my
to your board.
I don't know if I have my board up.
Wow. Bada bing.
There you go.
Great
big
job.
Big fucking day.
Also, I'll remind you tomorrow about the live pod fest show that we're doing on April 8th. But people, you better go back to yesterday's announcement, because it's about to sell. Not gonna.
Oh my god!
It's about to sell out.
It's not a.
It's
all right.
How many tickets were gone?
If you haven't bought a ticket yet, you're about to get schlonged.
One quarter of the tickets.
Yeah, that's
more
true.
Than
yes.
a quarter, about a quarter, were gone after one mention.
It's in your best interest to do it as soon as possible. It's at the Bell House, the Bell House NYC.
More and more people are hearing about it.
I think is the URL and
it's doing a better and better job.
NYC Podfest.
Yeah,
and we're gonna be live, a live show.
Taibbi
with Matt Taibbi, great all around. And
great all around.
I don't know.
That's
I'm
in
not
his
you.
Twitter
I don't,
bio.
Can't get just think
great
of the,
all
it
around.
Is a fact, and you will not deny.
And Janine Garofalo, original
also great all around.
Great all around. In a smaller.
It is a fact,
smaller,
and you will not deny it.
In a smaller person.
You know what we should start doing is collecting some like video to show. Can we show video or play audio? Can we do that? Will we have the ability to do that? I don't know, like stuff.
You want so much, and
that would be easy for them to have
you
a
give so little. I'm just kidding. You
mean play clips?
That's true.
Yeah, oh, that'd be really easy.
I want clips.
We'll yeah,
right. I want to make jokes
gonna,
and things.
Yeah, okay.
With a live audience. Let's go to the fun half.
Buy the tickets. It will be really good.
Okay, I will.
Don't buy the tickets, but don't have high expectations. It might be boring.
It might be boring.
It's not boring.
It'll be short.
Crazy.
Don't you know
Michael?
The expectations?
It'll
game?
Be short.
What's the matter with
it'll be
you?
Short. Folks.
Play the expectations.
It'll be
game.
Really short.
It's going to be short.
We may even do
it's
a meetup.
Probably
afterwards.
Super
we may do a
low
that's
energy.
True.
Michael may do a meetup.
I might do a separate
I might
meetup.
Do a meetup.
I may
we
do
may do
own
separate.
One.
We might
may
have competing meetups.
Oh my God.
Right wing Mandela might have a meetup.
Right wing Mandela.
Welcome to the fucking meetup, you cocks.
Michael's
going to
sell his own swag.
Agreed that
I am.
Right wing Mandela
Michael's
isn't invited.
Michael's going to go sell his own swag.
Yes, I am. And as a matter of fact, as recent tweets have pointed out,
polo shirts.
This great idea. Someone tweeted that Matt needs a mute button for you when you disrupt one of my flows.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well,
very,
oh,
some
really?
Very savvy listeners. Yes.
Oh, my.
I
someone
like
did
that.
Someone tweet that?
I mean, technically, yes. I have the
yeah, you should
here,
think about
so.
That. And then also
the
we've got
board.
And then we've got the
technically, Matt
also the
should
right
not
wing,
be able to mute anyone
because
he'd mute all of us.
All right.
Well, he
fun
does
half.
Have a mute button for everybody. He runs the board.
Okay. Well, Matt, use it a little bit more thoughtfully and expansively. Exactly.
Goodbye, Michael. Goodbye. We just put
oh,
it
it's okay,
all right,
Sam.
So
you got a couple of impressions.
It's true.
Everyone
you got a few
buy
little voices
to the show.
You do.
I don't know like, why you wouldn't.
It's only going to be really short, and if you try,
it's going to be really short.
It'll probably just be a disappointment.
It'll be all just Michael
and the thing about Matt Taibbi and Janine is they're not as funny live as they are on the air.
That's not even true.
Expectations game.
No.
God.
It's going to be so good.
All right, look, 646-257-3920 is the number. Call into the program. See you in the fun. Oh, look, if you want to support this program, and then as a way of us saying thank you, receive an extra hour plus of program, join themajorityreport.com. You can go to majority.fm, but join themajorityreport.com. Pennies a day. And you can also give it as a gift. Just go to majoritygift.com. Majoritygift.com. You can give it to your grandparents, to your grandkids, to your cousins, to your aunts, your uncles, that guy at work you don't like.
Senators.
Bashar al-Assad, apparently.
I thought Jimmy Dore was very persuasive in the debate with Sam. I'm just ordering a couple of chemical munition silos into Aleppo, but I'd like to get back to that debate. I don't think Sam understands the rage in the heartland.
We're going to take
a
quick break.
Total cuck.
Head into the fun half.
Say to Napu Pay.